Can you hear me? We good? Yes? Sweet. Good morning. Hey, okay. It still works sometimes. Welcome to the session on Kimchi New England IPAs. No? Okay. I'm really excited for this session. I think it's going to be really cool. So Kimchi for the homebrewer, we have two awesome presenters. But before we get to them, I'm going to talk about me. My name is Dennis Mitchell. I'm on the AHA Governing Committee. She's the chair of the Governing Committee. We'll get to her. At any point, if you see us walking around, say hi, talk to us. After the convention, email us. We like to hear from you. Today, if you're interested, at 4:30, we have the AHA members meeting, so you can talk to the board, get updates about the AHA. It's going to be in Ballroom A, so hope to see you there. All right, our two awesome presenters today. We have Miguel Richards from Moorline Lager House in Cincinnati. Miguel is chef at the Moorline Lager House and oversees monthly beer dinners, which I've heard are awesome, so I need to go to Cincinnati at some point. He loves to experiment with beer and food and is especially fond of using fermented foods and spice in his creations, along with beer. He works with flavors of beer and food to create amazing pairings, some of which we'll try today. And then we have Roxanne Westendorf from the Blotarian Brewing League. She has been homebrewing for 23 years. She's the current chair of the AHA Governing Committee, serves on the Brewers Association Board of Directors, and has twice been president of her local brew club. She is an avid foodie with interest in homemade foods, added cheese making to her repertoire of skills about 12 years ago, and has a passion for kimchi. Working on the Governing Committee with Roxanne, she is one of the most dedicated and passionate homebrewers, and she does a ton of work to advance the hobby. So we're lucky to have both of these speakers here today, so join me in welcoming them.
It's okay. I can use this one.
I just need to get this down. It's kind of echoing. Yeah. That'll be a little better. Okay. So before we get started really with that, I would like to tell you what we're going to cover and what we're not going to cover. This is really a quick, simple start to making kimchi at home. The ingredients, instructions, tips, and equipment, stuff like that. We're going to be tasting kimchi. We're going to be tasting beer with kimchi. We're going to have recipes and ideas for using kimchi beyond just as a condiment. We will not be covering a big history, like I've got one slide on history. We're not going to be covering the technical aspects of kimchi. What I found is it's like those are really cool talks for someone who's into making it already. But if you haven't started making it, you need that kind of nuts and bolts. I'm going to go to my kitchen. This is what I want to do. This is what I want to be able to do. So that's the idea of the talk today, is you can go home and get started based on this presentation, okay? So who are we and why do we kimchi? So I've been homebrewing for 24 years. I've dabbled in wine, cider, and mead too. I am an absolute foodie. I've been doing kimchi for about 3 years, and I've had like people like Chef Miguel says, I love your kimchi, bring me more, can we use it in a beer dinner? So I figured, oh, maybe we've got something here. And my motto, somebody asked me my motto one time, which kind of applies to all this stuff, beer making, I make cheese too, you know, kimchi and all that stuff. What's my motto? And I finally realized my motto is, because I can. I do these things because I can. And it just makes it a lot more fun. Miguel?
Hello. I'm Chef Miguel. I've been a professional chef for 17 years, cooking professionally for 23 years. I started very young, 15 years old. I'm also a musician. I play guitar and sing vocals in a heavy metal band. Rock on. And then I have like a deep passion for spicy food. I think everyone that knows me knows that no matter what menu you're going to kind of dabble in with me, that there's going to be something that's going to kind of kick you in the butt and really light you up. That's one of my favorite things to do. I make my own beef jerky. I'm into all that like dehydration stuff, fermentation of foods. Let's see, I do that at home and work. I send stuff to my family. I bring presents, on the holidays, all that stuff. I also develop beer dinners for the Moorline Lager House. So every month we host a beer dinner with local and national breweries, really big names, up down to the, 55 local breweries we have in Cincinnati. And It's usually a 5-course dinner, and we do it every month, and I like to push my boundaries there. And that's where I met Roxanne probably 6 years ago, and we've developed this relationship through that.
I almost forgot about the jerky, that habanero beef jerky. It was crazy. Okay. So what is kimchi? Basically, it's a lactobacillus fermentation of vegetables. It's a way of preserving food using good bacteria. And especially back before refrigeration, this was a big deal. Without refrigeration, people didn't have sources of vitamin C and vegetables and stuff in the winter. So that was really a way to keep people healthy over the winter. And plus, it kept flavor and infused flavor in things. There is no single kimchi. There are hundreds, probably thousands of variations of kimchi. We're doing a fairly traditional kimchi, not quite today, so the fermented one. And then, which some of you already have, the quick pickle kimchi. We'll be talking about recipes for both of the ones that you've got there. Kimchi doesn't even have to include cabbage. So there's a lot of stuff out there, a lot of options. It usually uses either salting or a salt brine, garlic, Korean red chili, which I believe New Holland is the official variety, but Korean red chili, ginger, some type of scallion or leek, fish sauce is optional, sugar is optional. So those are kind of the base ingredients, but man, you can go way far out of that and still have something that would be considered kimchi. Super quick history. You'll find sources that say it's only 500 years old or something like that, and I found this reference actually at the end of the presentation. So if you want to go look it up, I have it in the appendix. If you want to look it up later on when this is posted, this food journal of like ethnic food science article where these four Koreans like went through and traced the history of kimchi, and it was kind of like they were poo-pooing all the people who didn't like really believe that kimchi was that old. It's actually fairly entertaining to read how they shoot down all the things that chilies weren't there until 100 years ago and all this other stuff. It's crazy, but it's at least 4,000 years old. This was a part of a lifestyle. Burying kimchi jars is not magic. There is no magic to making kimchi to bury it. The whole thing with kimchi, from that standpoint, it was the equivalent to refrigeration. It was a way of temperature control. So you can make great kimchi without having to bury things in your backyard. There actually were summer and winter kimchis. So summer kimchis, you didn't need refrigeration because literally you're making it every couple days and finishing it every couple days. It can be consumed on its own, and it can also be used with other things in foods, in preparation. And we do have a few recipes and ideas for that at the end of the presentation. And a lot of the ingredients in kimchi have antimicrobial properties. So they let lactobacillus go, but they keep the bad guys out of there. They keep the bad guys in check. And that's why kimchi is so cool. How many of you here have had kimchi before? Yeah, not surprising. How many of you have had live kimchi, so not pasteurized kimchi? Okay. Has anybody not had live kimchi? For those people who have not had live kimchi, have you had, like, live lambics? Okay, cool. Just making sure you know, like, what tomorrow morning will smell like in the bathroom. Okay. It's a live culture. It's exactly the same, okay? So we've got two kimchis. Originally, we were going to pair the first kimchi with Allagash White, but the person who was getting that for me had an emergency this week and is out of town, so I don't have that. So the first one is being paired with peeper. Now, this is, not everybody has it yet, but it's the red one. So this is the fermented kimchi. The reason I didn't change the slide out is I would encourage you to get something like Allagash White, like a true Belgian-style wit, not the American-style wits, and pair it with a spicy fermented kimchi. It was absolutely amazing. It's going to be great with the peeper, which is an American pale ale. But I did want I kept that slide up there, even though we weren't able to get the white, just because it's an amazing pairing.
It truly is.
Yeah, we did it in Cincinnati because I was worried that it was not going to be a good pairing, and we're like, oh, my God, this is amazing. So peeper will be great with it. I would not recommend a double IPA. The super high hopping on the double IPA just does not work with that fermented quality. Even though normally those types of foods go well with spice, it was a clash in your mouth. So we would do that. My base recipe for the kimchi is you have a couple elements of it. You have a paste, you have the veggies, and you have the brine. So you kind of make them separately, and then at the end you put them all together. So the paste, I use about a third a cup of grated ginger, about 6 to 8 garlic cloves, a bunch of green onions, somewhere between a quarter and a half cup of Korean red pepper. And interestingly, in the 3 batches I made for this talk, I probably started out at like a rounded quarter, then went to a rounded third, then went to a rounded half. So some of you may get ones that are a little more spicy than others. Optional, which I did not use. So mine is this actually is a vegan kimchi, not because I'm vegan, because it's just how I prefer to make it. And I have friends who are vegetarians. You can put a little bit of fish sauce and a little bit of sugar in. The sugar just kind of jump starts the fermentation. But that's the cool thing about kimchi. It's all about personal preference. You've got veggies. Napa cabbage is kind of a staple for a lot of kimchis. I add baby bok choy because I wanted a little bit more green in it. Carrots are pretty traditional. Daikon radish is pretty traditional. And I decided one day to put a handful of snow peas in, and I really liked how that came out. I do a brine about this is for like a half gallon-ish. I do 2 quarts of filtered water using either kosher, pickling, or sea salt. You can do that. A tablespoon of salt per cup. There are other kimchis where you salt the veggies and like let the juices come out. For your base kimchi, a brine is great. You know exactly how much salt you're using, and it gives you pretty consistent results. Equipment. There are tons of fermenting things, and I have pictures of others later. My very first one was this like that small little round one. They have the nice little split stones that go in there to weight your vegetables down. Thing for an airlock. I got that out of Gardner's Supply. Actually, I got both of these out of Gardner's Supply catalog. That's where I first found stuff. The other one's a Kilner jar. The disadvantage with both of these is they really don't seal very well. So stuff's not coming out through the airlock. It kind of comes out through the edges. It doesn't make bad kimchi. It just makes it a little harder to not have a mess on your countertop when you're doing things. And I'll show you some other things. Mason jars with special lids and everything work great, too. So you don't need a lot of specialized equipment. Having something to weight down the veggies in there is actually pretty important. And so I would recommend that you do taste that red kimchi with the peeper, with and without the peeper. I'm not like shy about putting the peppers in. I just kind of, that doesn't look red enough, and I start adding some more. So, from the vegetables, just putting these out here to see. We've got the Napa cabbage, the daikon, the baby bok choy, and the carrots and the snow peas. So those are the vegetables that are used in this particular one. Probably about an 8-inch segment of that bok choy. That's about like 2+ inches in diameter. For the spices and paste and the brine, you can, at specialty food stores, find red pepper powder, coarse for kimchi. It's pretty funny. And I think nothing else is in English on this except the nutrition label. But this is the type of pepper that you want to use. You want to use the coarse pepper that's designed for kimchi, a Korean version. One of the funny things is on the back, there's like how many servings. It's like this is a pound container. It said 450 servings. Which I thought was really funny. Make sure your ginger is super fresh. Make sure your garlic is fresh. Make sure your onions are fresh. You can also use leeks if you want to. I tend to use kosher salt because I have a lot, and it's not nearly as expensive as sea salt. But you don't want to use iodized stuff. Iodized salts will introduce bitterness in the cheese, in the kimchi, anything else. The iodine will introduce bitterness, so you don't really want to use those. Prep. Chop it up. Traditionally, you don't have to chop up your cabbage. Traditionally, you can make it where you massage stuff in. It kind of makes it hard to serve to a group like this and to use for other things. So I just chop it about 1-inch-ish size. I tend to julienne the other vegetables. You can actually grate the radish if you want to, grate the carrots if you want to. For me, julienning is just easier. I do rinse. I peel the root vegetables. I rinse the vegetables. I don't do a super thorough cleaning. I want the dirt off, but I don't want to, like, kill the bugs on the vegetables because that's what I need. But you don't want, like, particulate dirt in there and stuff like that. So I will rinse. I cut off any bad spots. You don't want to have something with bad spots in because that's, like, not necessarily good bacteria. You brine. So I put the vegetables in. I add the brine on top. So the vegetables are in a bowl. I add the brine on top. I put a plate or something like that on it. For the first 30 minutes, I put a weight on it. That's just one of my measuring bowls there. Don't make the brine too high. You want it to cover eventually, but give it a half an hour before you decide if you want to add more, because as the brine starts working, the salt will pull some of the water out. It'll start softening the vegetables. Some of the water will come out. And if you add too much, now you're going to have an overflow of brine on your countertop. It's not that big a disaster if it happens. It's just a little bit easier to not have to clean it up. So I make my brine. I put it in. It's an 8 to 12-hour brine. So do it in the evening, and then the next morning you can do it, or do it in the morning, and then by the evening you can put your stuff in the pot. The paste. So making the paste. This is the most annoying part of doing kimchi, is making the paste, just so you know. I like to make the paste early, so it kind of sits around, and then when I need it, it's kind of like marinated itself together a little bit. But grating the ginger takes forever. Get a very good microplane grater, and that's the part that's really annoying. Make sure you peel the ginger. You press the garlic or finely mince. This is one place where I do like to press it, so I'm getting some more juice out, so the paste actually, you get some moisture in that paste when it's kind of melding flavors. Cut up the green onions or leeks. Add the pepper flakes. If you're using sugar and fish oil, this is where you would add it. Mix it together to form a paste. Let it hang out until your veggies are ready. But the grating, like, you know, it's annoying. Just, this is your, you know, a third of a cup is a lot of ginger to grate. Again, this is a basically a half-gallon batch, so if you're making a quart, you cut everything in half. Putting it all together. Drain the brine. I save some of the brine. Other places will tell you to rinse it and then, like, add some extra salt. I've got a septic tank. I don't like putting more salt down the septic tank than I have to. So I just drain the brine. I save a little bit to use for topping off as necessary, because you always want some liquid on the top. You don't want, like, airspace on top. You mix it together. This is one place where you may really want to put gloves on, because you really don't want pepper and all that stuff on your hands after the fact. But mix the paste with the veggies, and then put it in your mason jars. I use one of those canning funnels. Is great. It makes it way easier to get this in. You press it down. You need to get the air spaces out. You don't want air spaces in there. That's where you can start getting mold growth and things. So you want to press it down, get the air space out. If you need, add enough of that reserve brine to cover the veggies completely. Make sure you put your weights in. Put on your litter airlock or your little mason jar bubbler lid or whatever you're going to use, and then you let it sit for a while, which is pretty cool. You're going to create a lot of CO2. CO2 is going to, so this is a little after, but I'm going to go off in order. You're going to create CO2, and I don't know how easy it is to see, but the start, day one, day two, you notice how the liquid level kind of goes up. It's not really as much the liquid level going up as it is the CO2 is creating pockets, and it can't really escape those veggies quite as easily. And you can see in that lower picture that you've got that. So you need to make sure to leave a little bit of air space or head space in the top. If you don't, you'll be cleaning up your counter multiple times a day once fermentation starts, and your kitchen will stink to high heaven. How do I know this? I really don't need that air space. Yeah. Anyway, I really don't need that air space. And when it does get there and starts, kind of risk going over, let's see if, oh, come on, I got a video. How do I do the video? There we go, do the twist. So you just twist it, and then you can see the bubbles starting to come up. So if you just twist it like that, you can actually force some of those bubbles up and out, so it keeps it from overflowing the jar. Yeah, it's pretty funny. It's really hard to do with the phone in one hand and the other hand twisting, though, but it kind of works. Let's go back to that other picture. I do not use sugar, so I'm usually at a 1 to 1.5 week fermentation on the kitchen countertop. It's okay to taste. I wouldn't go into it too often. Every time you go into it, you're adding air, which runs the risk of like mold growth and stuff like that. I just wait till it start, like, it's obviously kind of done fermenting, and let it settle. If you don't like how sour this is, then you probably want to stop it earlier. In other words, put it in the refrigerator. I usually transfer it into mason jars, mostly because I might want to use that other jar already. If you're fermenting in a mason jar, just put a regular lid on it, stick it in the fridge. and it will slow down the fermentation enough that you don't have to worry about that. Kimchi will last, live kimchi will last at least several months in the refrigerator. I have had it last at least a year. You know, if there's no mold growing on the top, if it does, like, if it doesn't smell like weird, it will smell more sour, but if it doesn't smell off, you're probably okay. It's a natural food. So let's make sure I do the right thing. So that's where it is. So this is the description of peeper, which is the one I gave. So did peeper pair well with that? It's kind of hard to eat kimchi while I'm talking. Pair well with that? It's a really nice balanced pale ale. So you don't have too much hops, so you're not going to get a harsh feel in your mouth. Okay. Did everybody get the red kimchi so far? Is anybody missing that yet? If you're missing, like, raise your hand so they can get you some. Over here in the center. That is a very nice pale ale. Love it. Okay. Any questions on that before we go on? I just like, you know, just something. We'll have plenty of time for questions afterwards. Okay. Miguel.
All right. On the other opposite side of the spectrum, I wanted to talk about a quick kimchi pickle. It's like a pickling. I wouldn't say it's a real kimchi. It's kind of like a play on kimchi.
The Korean books I have, the marinade type, are actually listed in them too.
Okay.
So it's officially a kimchi.
So it's legit. But the biggest thing, instead of doing the whole fermentation process, is marinating it in something that's already fermented is why we use the fish sauce. And you can do this with lots of things. It's nice and easy to slice your vegetables very thin. That way it only takes a couple hours to really settle. So it's a Vietnamese Nguyen Cham marinade is the marinade we use for it. And basically you just pour that over the vegetable medley. So I'll start with the vegetables. You just take two English cucumbers and we use a Japanese mandolin to slice real thin by hand. Slice the red onions on the mandolin. You can use serrano chilies, Thai chilies on the mandolin. Sometimes you might want to use a knife for those. They can kind of topple over. But you can use as many as you want, depending on how spicy you want it. And then we have a quarter cup of cilantro minced. And then we make the marinade. So we have warm water, half cup of warm water, half cup of white sugar, half cup of freshly squeezed lime juice, third cup of Vietnamese fish sauce, and two medium garlic cloves minced. So it's pretty similar to a regular pickling liquid, except for adding the fish sauce.
Use that one too.
And then you dissolve the sugar in it. That's why you use the warm water, so the sugar will dissolve. And then you add the lime juice and everything together. Pour that over the top.
And by the way, it was Thai chilies in there, because I made this yesterday morning.
So here's just some pictures here of the vegetables. And you can see on the bottom the onions and cucumbers are sliced very thin by using the mandolin. Just a couple pictures of the ingredients for the marinade. That's a pretty popular fish sauce you can get in any Asian market or a nicer supermarket. There's us putting it together in the mason jar. And 2 hours later, it is ready to eat. We decided to pair this with, we picked a Christian Moorline Barbarossa since I'm a chef at Moorline Lagerhaus, and we brew this beer in-house at my restaurant. And we thought it would be more of a complementative pairing versus contrasting because of the dark malts in the Barbarossa, which will pair nicely with the fish sauce. So how was that pairing there?
Okay, so cooking with kimchi, it's more than just a condiment. Soups, stir fries, rices, risottos, egg rolls. Actually, Chef Miguel just, in the beer dinner he did this week, he did kimchi and egg rolls. We actually have that recipe for you here. Dumpling, stuffing, topping, grilled cheese. It's like crazy stuff. I have these Korean books I'm going through. The recipes are nuts. Martinis, a kimchi teeny, was like in one of the recipe books. I was like, this is nuts. That was, they actually used a radish kimchi, so a daikon radish kimchi for that. It was crazy. You know, the possibilities are endless. The key is to actually think about, oh, I have this kimchi. Like, especially if you make it, then I have this kimchi. I can use it in other things. So a couple recipes. One of my favorite things was I had this old kimchi book, and I have it in the presentation so you can see it. And I had been to a Korean restaurant, and I saw we had kimchi soup, and I'm like, oh, this is wonderful. And it was a cold winter day, and I had kimchi, and we have tofu around and pork, and it's like very few ingredients. I'm like, I want to make kimchi soup. Do I have a recipe? And I found one. I have a bunch of more Korean books now, and the recipes are all very similar. It's a little bit of pork tenderloin, a package of tofu, some kimchi, water, green onions, sesame oil. Some call for clams. I don't usually have clams around, so I don't really worry about that. I'm not going to wait till I can go buy clams to make this. You can either slice the pork super thin, which if you want to do that, it's got to be partially frozen, or slice it into like little matchsticks or something like that. You saute it. You add your kimchi. You add water. You add your tofu and onions, and you serve it with rice. If you want it a little spicier, add a little bit more chili, or like make a chili paste with oil. If that, just use your Korean chili, add some oil to it. You can keep it around on the shelf for a while, and you can always spice stuff up with that. I do use the liquid on the kimchi, and then I don't add any salt, because then the kimchi and the liquid give you enough salt in the soup. So if you want it a little spicier, make sure you add some of the liquid from the kimchi too. Super easy, and on a cold winter day, there's nothing that beats this soup. And it reheats really well, too.
I'm sure everyone would appreciate, in the Northeast Coast, you're not using canned clams also.
Yeah. I mean, if you have clams, you just put them in, I think, in that last 10 minutes of cooking, which would be really cool. But, like, you know, I'd have to make a separate trip to the one grocery store because you don't want them old. So I just don't bother doing it. But I've had it at the restaurant with clams in it, so it is very good.
What kind of rice?
Just short grain white rice. You could always use the kimchi, like the Korean black rice, which is a bean rice type of thing. I don't think that works as well in the soup. I think the white rice is better for the soup. Kimchi rice. This is actually out of one of the books. Basically, it's just a. You take kimchi and you stick it on top of rice in a rice cooker is pretty much what it is. It's an official like recipe in the things. They call it kimchi bop, just a really simple type of thing. The intent here is not to go through like the recipes that we haven't done in detail, but just to give you a couple recipes to get you started. So this is from the one book called Kimchi Essential Recipes of the Korean Kitchen. But super simple. Basically, if you're using a rice cooker, you don't even have to worry about half the directions. If you're not, you just turn the heat down twice during cooking, pretty much. But super simple, like a nice, like, I just need a side dish or I just need something to warm me up and have some spice. It's yours. He's not going to go through all these words, don't worry.
I won't. We have kimchi egg rolls here. So basically, the biggest idea behind this is instead of using cabbage or shredded cabbage in your egg rolls, you're replacing with kimchi. So you're getting that kind of funkiness from it, and it just changes the element. One thing I would definitely suggest is that you pat dry the kimchi before you use it. Otherwise, your egg rolls will become a little soggy before you fry them off. But bulgogi marinade, it's ribeye strips, a pear, half onion, garlic cloves, tablespoon of sesame oil, 4 tablespoons soy sauce. You have mirin, sugar, chopped scallions, and sesame seeds. And then the egg roll wrappers, you use the chopped kimchi, shredded cheddar, water to seal the egg rolls, and then you fry them in vegetable oil. You can use shortening. You can use a lot of different oils there, whatever you prefer. For the dipping sauce, which is really important, to use the Korean gwacheng sauce, soy sauce, sugar, sesame oil, scallions, and sesame seeds. And then you just mix all that together.
And if you don't happen to have a really cool international market like we do in Cincinnati, this crazy place called Jungle Jim's, look it up sometime. You know, Whole Foods is like, an infant compared to what we have at Jungle Jim's. But if you don't have that, most of this stuff can be found online if you don't have a good ethnic market around you, the sauces and the ingredients. Also, if you, I'm sure we have kimchi and beer left over, so if you want more kimchi or beer, just raise your hand and people will bring it to you. I did make 4 gallons of kimchi, so.
I didn't get any kimchi.
So we'll get that. Again, the reason is not to have you read the entire recipe up here, but that when you access the presentation, you have the recipe. So that's why it's a little... kimchi dumplings is the other one. This was one I thought was really interesting from the books that came out, because, like, being Italian, the idea of, like, you know, making my own dough to roll out dumplings was pretty cool. It's a very simple flour. Basically, you just make it up, roll it, and put the innards inside, crunch the edges, and then you can either freeze it or use it right away. You boil it and use it with a dipping sauce. Really quite simple. So
I would say steaming it a lot of times.
Or steaming,
it's a little safer. They tend to pop open when you boil them.
Yeah. So that's another option. But, you know, these, apparently it even said in the recipe, these freeze really well. But I do recommend, like, freezing them so you're cooking them after, not just trying to heat them up. It usually works better with pasta things. So that's another recipe that I thought was really cool. Beyond cabbage, as I was looking through the kimchi books that I have, some of the things that are out there are really crazy. One of the things I decided to grow this year in my garden, hopefully I'll have flowers on them when I get home, are those long red beans, you know, the Asian long red beans. And I desperately want to kimchi some of them. I think that's really cool. I actually kimchied collards the other day because I had these collards I wasn't going to use. I'm like, what am I going to do with them? I'll kimchi them. And then I'll stir fry them when I want to go use them, and that would be really cool. Butternut squash, I actually just put that in the refrigerator, and then there's a recipe in one of the books for a butternut squash soup with kimchi butternut squash soup. That was crazy. Turnips, beets, any of those root types of vegetables are going to work well. Other greens, ginseng, peppers. There was actually a kimchi oyster thing in the thing, too. It was kind of crazy. Things for quick marinades, short fermentation, or quick eating, the things are going to absorb water differently. So they're not going to keep as well, but they're going to be really cool if you do a marinade type of kimchi with them. Eggplant, mushroom, zucchini, tomato. Any of the fermented vegetables will probably work too. Fruit can work. So tons of, if you get Korean kimchi books, and I've got some references here, there's some really cool recipes in there. People think of the marinade as kind of cheating, but in these books, there are things that are literally eat right away, like marinades, quick things, and there are things that they want you to ferment for a longer period of time. So just because you're not fermenting something doesn't mean it doesn't fall within this realm. But obviously the fermented stuff is truly cool, and especially for those of us who are beer people and cheese people and all that kind of stuff who like to play with alternate fermentations. These are the books that I have that I looked at. The first one that got me started on kimchi was The Wild Fermentation by Sander Elliott Katz. And that's where my original base recipe came from. The Korean Kitchen is where my original... the kimchi soup came from, and then all the other books have kimchi soups, and they're almost identical recipes, so it must be pretty cool. The Kimchi Cookbook, the Kimchi, the Essential Kitchen, and then Fiery Ferments. The two ones that have the Korean authors I thought were really cool as far as, like, how far they went into the different types of kimchis, different ingredients, different kimchi types, the quicks and the extended fermentation. So I'm really excited to dig into some of those books. One of them actually has a recipe for, if you don't want to use fish sauce but you still want umami, a mushroom broth. I think that was the Fiery Ferments. So some options if you want to keep it vegan but you want the umami. Excuse me. There are lots of fermenters. I just bought those little things that look like baby bottles for the top of your... mason jars. They're basically burpers. So you can just use your mason jar, and then when it's done fermenting, change out the lid. There are weights for wide mouth mason jars. There are a friend of mine lived in Korea, was in Korea for the military, and his Korean family that he stayed with there used those brown things. I kind of like to be able to see the fermentation, my personal preference, but there's things like that. There's lots of crocks out there. How much money do you want to spend on your crocks, basically? How fancy do you want to get? What sizes? Anything else before we go to thanks?
Just one thing I wanted to say about having, when you have the kimchi in your refrigerator, there's so many things you can do with it. We were kind of talking about the recipes, but it's almost just anything you're cooking. Like, you're like, man, I really want to make fried rice, or sometimes I'll even get fried rice from a Chinese restaurant because I'm a chef. I don't want to cook all the time, and I'll chop up kimchi, and I'll add fish sauce to my fried rice, and it's a game changer. Another thing, if there's a lot of liquid in your kimchi, if you make it, we call it kimchi hot sauce. You just strain off the liquid to your desire, and then you bottle that separately, and you can add that to different dishes as a hot sauce, and I thought that was really cool. It's one of the newer things I've been doing with that. So.
Yeah. Special thanks. The Allagash beer, unfortunately, we had the emergency, so we didn't get that. Main Beer and Dan Kleben for donating the beer. Greg Hardman, who's the owner of Moorline. Colin McGregor, who like had to go search down a keg so he could actually keg the Barbarossa for us. And Christian Moorline for donating beer and for supporting Chef Miguel to come here. Kelly Montgomery and Brink Brewing for helping us with the kimchi beer pairing and for a shipboat load of limes. I had to get 3 cups of lime juice to make that kimchi. And he had just done a beer where he'd used a lot of zest and how all these limes that I could have, which was amazing. And all those other homebrewers who have given me resources and tips along the way. So just so you know, in the appendix, I've got the mushroom broth, some extra thoughts and tips, and that crazy article referenced there. So that stuff will be in the presentation. Questions? And we need to get some for Chef Miguel up here, too, especially the red one. But if you have questions, just come up to the microphone, and we'll answer them if we can, and hopefully send you places to get the answers if we can't.
Hi. How you guys doing? So I've got 2 little kids in the house, and obviously little kids tend to be kind of sensitive to hot stuff, and I know it's kind of heresy to make a kimchi that isn't super spicy or even moderately spicy. But do you have any suggestions for, like, balancing the flavor without adding hot peppers or anything like that?
Actually, the first kimchi I made, I didn't have the right kinds of peppers. I had these threads, which actually don't add any heat. They just look pretty. So I basically had a garlic ginger kimchi, and people loved it. It was not very spicy. A couple of the books have, like, the white kimchis that don't have them in. A lot of that goes with daikon radish and stuff like that, which is wonderful because it's crunchy and, like, fun for kids to eat, too, because you can make it into cubes or spears. And those are basically fermentation. They usually have some garlic and some ginger, not as much, but they don't actually use any pepper. So I would look at those two, the Korean author cookbooks, I would look at those two for those recipes because I looked at those recipes and they look really simple and really nice. So
cool. Thank you very much.
Also, using that optional sugar will help kind of counteract any chili you do use, and it'll actually counteract the spiciness naturally you'll get from the garlic. So even if you don't use any chilies, I would recommend the optional sugar.
And the marinade one, you could just leave them out completely.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you both very much.
Hey, good morning. I was curious on any of the sanitization that you did. Like, do you use any 5-star or anything like that to clean the jars first? Or
I made sure the jars were clean. I did use Star Sand.
For the weights also?
Yeah, I just spray that stuff down with Star Sand and stick it in. The nice thing is there's so much antimicrobial stuff in, I don't have to be too anal about it, but it's always a good idea if you're going to keep it for a long period of time to go ahead and do that. So I'll, like, just quick spritz. I brought the my bottle of Star Sand that I keep in the kitchen. I use it for cheese making, too.
I have two wholly unrelated questions, but the first one is, in looking at some recipes, I found that they either recommend to brine the cabbage for if it's 1 hour to 2 hours or 4 hours or overnight. I've always done just a couple because I don't plan a day in advance, but I'm wondering if there's, like, a relative merit to, or what do you get additionally from doing it overnight? And then the second question is, I heard from a former coworker who grew up in a Korean household that their parents would make this stock kimchi that was extremely sour. They would add just, like, a little bit to soups and things. But I don't know how you do that without adding just a bunch of extra sugar to get the lacto to go more, but I'm not sure if you come across that at all.
Okay. So the first question the first question was?
The brine, length of time
the
for brine.
You know, even in the books, like, different foods, they would take different brines. The more fibrous something is, the thicker it is, usually the longer the brine time. Like, for the straight-up daikon radish and the butternut squash, it recommended doing the salting as opposed to a brine. The others, it recommends doing that. If you don't brine long enough, it's not soft enough, like so you can't really squeeze it down much, and then a lot of that moisture pulling out happens during the ferment, so it's just not as... I haven't done it, but overnight's fun, especially since you can make up everything, so the next day it's literally combined and stick it in jars, so that's pretty cool. And the second question was... Shoot. What was the second question?
Like a stock, very sour kimchi.
So... If you just let it ferment longer at room temperature, you're going to get a lot more sour. So if you really want that sour stuff, leave it at room temperature for a little longer. Or the older kimchis, even in the refrigerator, are going to get more sour. And one of the things, if you have something that's sour, like too sour, it's too sour for me to eat, when you cook with it, you're going to moderate that sourness. So it's going to be, it's kind of both things. It's like you can use it for cooking, you have something for cooking, but you moderate that sourness. So definitely, if you have super old kimchi, cooking with it is great because you get the sourness and you kind of blend the flavors a little better. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Cool.
All right, so this is wild fermenting with lactobacillus or whatever's on the plant.
Right.
Do you notice much variation in how it ferments, what kind of fermentation character you get, and do you try to control that at all?
I have not noticed a difference in... I know James has had several of my batches. Have you noticed a whole lot of difference in the batches?
Not really.
It's really how long it takes to ferment. So, like, the first two batches that I did were, like, 10-day ferments. The last batch, the temperature in my kitchen was, like, the cold spell was over, and it was warmer, and the temperature in my kitchen was probably 5 degrees warmer, and it went a week. So I think for me, it's been more how long it takes to kind of go up and then back down as opposed to the other things. The other thing is which foods you're using. It's just going to give you a different character because of the foods you're using. My guess is if you rinsed your vegetables, you might get and then added back salt that you would probably change the character a little because you're rinsing out some of that vegetable, the stuff that's pulled out of vegetables during the brine. So that might make more difference than really just the day-to-day stuff. I usually don't have batches to compare side by side. but people have had my stuff, and I don't think it's huge differences. I think those other things are going to make more difference.
So, good morning. My question is actually a little bit on the same line as his. Kind of new to this, the lactobacillus, you said it's a wild bacteria that we're going to be using. Is there ever a time where we're going to need to actually add it in ourselves or anything?
I have seen, like when I first got those Kilner jars and stuff, they actually have like places you can order starters for kimchi. So there are things. I don't know, unless for some reason I just don't know how you get all the ingredients wouldn't have something on them.
Okay.
I think the reason to use them is more if you want it to start faster.
Okay.
I think that's where the sugar comes in. On a fermented one, that's where the sugar comes in. On a marinated one, it is very different. Like what Chef Miguel says, it cuts the acidity, it cuts some of the other stuff on a marinated. But on a fermented one, it's really more about accelerating the start. So I've never had any issue with it starting. It's just like if it's cool, it takes a couple days to start.
Thank you.
Hi. Would the same process be used to make sauerkraut, just different ingredients?
Yeah, we didn't want to talk about sauerkraut. I've only made sauerkraut once, and it's the only time I ever got, mold on my fermentation. And it's the white mold, which is actually okay. You scrape it off and everything. And part of the problem with that is I just had way too much airspace in the thing. Sauerkraut does take longer. Sauerkraut is almost always a straight salt, not a brine, and then you crunch it. So you basically... you put it in your crock right away, it crunches down to half. So you really have to have two things going and then combine them to not have to worry about that mold. But it does take longer. You need to have much more, like those little glass weights that you put in would not work. You really have to have weights that kind of cover the whole thing because if it's not under, you're going to get mold. And mine went way too salty, so I haven't tried sauerkraut again because I like kimchi better. My husband doesn't like sauerkraut, so it's like, why should I make it? Because I don't eat enough to matter. But, yeah, it's very similar. But you just don't have the other stuff. Like you don't have the garlic and the other antimicrobials in them. So you're going to get, you're often going to get mold. But as long as it's white, you can, skimmed off an inch down. wiped down the sides, put it in another container, and it never grew the mold again. So.
Thank you. I'm famous in my house for picking flavors that clash.
Hold on. Miguel actually, if he's made sauerkraut.
When you buy sauerkraut from the store that's just straight up sauerkraut, I mean, of course, it's just the salt brine, but anytime I've ever made it, it's probably a lot more like chef influenced, and we use garlic. We put bay leaves, juniper berries, apples. You know, we do all sorts of different things. So I would actually encourage using those micro, like the garlic, to help prevent some of that mold, and I think that would be the more flavorful route to take also.
Basically, my question is, I'm the only person in my house that likes hot stuff, and I love kimchi. But my family likes fermented things, so I was wondering, could I make a kimchi recipe and split it, go one way with the hot stuff, and what would I use to kind of keep a strong flavor but not being hot?
Like I said,
I'm famous for finding clashing flavors.
Do they like ginger and garlic?
It's worth a shot, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, basically, just split your paste. Split the ginger and garlic and onions in the paste and put the peppers in one. And that's where those little burper things on the jars would come in really handy, because then you just get the right size jar to split your batch and put those burpers on, and you get your fermentations going side by side. Like I said, my first one didn't really have anything spicy in it, but people loved it. Okay. Oops.
Good morning. Both of these examples were absolutely delicious. Thank you very much for them both. My question is on the cucumber one. Yes, thank y'all very much.
Cucumber one is always.
On the cucumber one, you said you used fish sauce as a pre-fermentable?
Yeah, it's for the flavor.
Okay. In a household, so it's just for the flavor. It's not for the fermentable portion of it?
Right. It's technically a marinade.
That answers my question.
There's no fermentation in that 2 hours.
I have someone who is objectionable to all things fish, so I can leave it out and...
Sure.
Still work. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Very much. Thank you very much. Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. So this came from one of the books from the Kimchi Cookbook. Is a mushroom broth can give you the umami. It's basically you take dried mushrooms, salt, and, boiling water, let it sit, and then strain it. You know, and that gives you that, and you can use that as a replacement for fish sauce.
Or if you didn't use any and you just put it over like some grilled shrimp or something, you would get a lot of umami naturally from the shrimp. Oh, he's allergic to seafood. Pork.
Any other questions? All right, so favorites. So you have a favorite? Fish sauce one? The red one? Yeah, when he made the cucumber at a dinner, I made him give me some to take home.
And vice versa with the...
Yeah. All right, thank you, guys.